Hi, and welcome to the Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the Indiana Distressed Unit Appeal Board voting in favor of the Geary Community School Corporation holding a referendum in November. The FBI is investigating the assault on Bloomington resident Vox Booker as a possible hate crime. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Ellen Sarletta, director for the Center for Urban and Regional Excellence at Indiana University Northwest. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Indiana Distressed Unit Appeal Board voted in favor of the Geary Community School Corporation holding a referendum in November that, if approved by voters, would help achieve the school district's goal of balancing the corporation's budget. State law requires that the Geary schools have a balanced budget for two consecutive years in order to end state oversight. Administrators and the emergency management team have so far cut the deficit from $22 million in 2017 to $6 million as of January 2020. Emergency manager Dr. Paige McNulty says the referendum would raise approximately 16 cents a day from the average household in Geary and 47 cents a day from the average business. In total, the referendum would collect approximately $6 million a year, with the first $1 million earmarked for Geary teachers. The rest of what is raised would help enhance school safety and security and create more opportunities for students to enroll in preschool and participate in extracurricular activities, including athletics. The public will be kept informed on the Geary School's website as to how the money is spent.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The public comment period is still on for remarks about the plan to take 671 homes at the USS Lead site in East Chicago off the Superfund National Priorities list. Public comment began Wednesday and will continue through August 7th. But the Post Tribune reports that not everyone on the East Chicago Calumet Coalition Community Advisory Group has been notified of the plan to remove the houses from the list, and they are concerned that groundwater beneath their homes may still be contaminated. EPA regional officials say they'll continue to look for underground contamination. Region 5 staff with the Environmental Protection Agency say that lead-contaminated soil has been removed from 95% of the mostly residential 1,078 properties within zones 2 and 3 of the site. The remaining properties in zones 2 and 3 will stay on the national priorities list until soil cleanups have been completed and confirmed.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Bloomington police have arrested the driver who ran her car through a line of protesters during a rally against racism Monday evening, leaving two people injured. 62-year-old Christy Bennett was in Scottsburg when officers from the Bloomington Police Department took her into custody Wednesday evening. Bennett was held at the Monroe County Jail for the following offenses: criminal recklessness, a level 6 felony, leaving the scene of an accident resulting in serious bodily injury, a level 6 felony, and leaving the scene of an accident resulting in bodily injury, a class A misdemeanor. She was released hours later after posting a $500 bail. The passenger that was in the car with Bennett Monday evening was released after being interviewed by investigators.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The Federal Bureau of Investigations is investigating the assault on Bloomington resident Vox Booker as a possible hate crime, according to Booker's attorney, Kitty Lyle. Booker, who is black, was assaulted by a group of white men on the 4th of July as he made his way through the woods to nearby Lake Monroe to watch the lunar eclipse. As the men pin Booker against a tree, he says they threatened to use a noose on him. Here's his attorney, Lyle, at a news conference outside the Monroe County Courthouse earlier this week.
And I can tell you, as a criminal lawyer of over 30 years, I never thought I would say, boy, am I glad the FBI are coming. But we are. We want this investigated as a hate crime. It was clearly racially motivated.
There is currently no timeline for the investigation.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Former Secretary of State Todd Rokita is the Indiana Republican Party's nominee for Attorney General. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports incumbent Curtis Hill, who criminally battered four women in 2018, lost a narrow vote by party delegates.
Curtis Hill faced three Republican challengers for Attorney General amid a suspension of his law license by the Indiana Supreme Court. Rokita, the last to enter the race, emerged the victor over Hill by a 52-48% margin in the final round of balloting. Rokita served two terms as Secretary of State and four in Congress before an unsuccessful bid for U.S. Senate. He was the most direct of the GOP candidates in attacking Hill, who he called wounded, and said the embattled incumbent put the office at risk. Rokita will face off in November against Democrat Jonathan Weinzapfel, the former mayor of Evansville. Democrats haven't won an election for Indiana Attorney General since 1996. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
U.S. Senator Todd Young says he wants the federal government's next round of COVID-19 relief to be, quote, targeted at those who need help the most. Young is critical of the package passed by the U.S. House, a $3 trillion proposal dubbed the HEROES Act. That legislation includes another direct payment to Americans, hazard pay for essential workers, more money to boost COVID testing, and relief for states and local governments. Young says Congress needs to evaluate the economic picture and more finely target its relief before passing out another round of funding.
We still have a lot of underutilized resources, including money in the Paycheck Protection Program that have not yet been drawn down.
Indiana, like many other states, has been asking for help to fill a significant hole in its budget from lost revenue due to COVID-19. But Congress barred them from using previous federal relief money to do so. Young has said he doesn't want to bail out states, but is starting to change that tune.
I think some measure of flexibility is going to be required and would be appropriate as we appropriate all these monies so that Indiana will be able to fill some gaps with some of these federal monies.
The Republican lawmaker says he doesn't know if the next relief package will include another round of stimulus checks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Governor's Workforce Cabinet says it's expanding the state's Next Level Jobs program with $37 million from the CARES Act. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports it's a major part of the state's strategy to help Hoosiers recover from pandemic-related job losses.
Next Level Jobs is made up of two programs, Workforce Learning Grants and Employer Training Grants. As part of the Rapid Recovery Initiative, the state is making them available to more people and increasing the amount they can get under each grant. With Workforce Learning Grants, Hoosiers can now get up to $10,000 to take classes that lead to certifications in high-demand jobs. The number of certifications that qualify has been increased. Employer training grants, meant for companies to train new or existing workers, are being increased to a maximum of $100,000. $5 million in CARES Act money is being set aside specifically for minority, women, and veteran-owned businesses to get this grant. Local workforce boards across the state will administer the programs with the additional funding. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Go to school in person this fall or leave the country. That's the message Immigration and Customs Enforcement is sending to international college students with a new policy announced Monday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains that's leaving students scrambling to figure out their options.
The policy says international students will have their visas revoked if they attend colleges only offering online coursework this fall instead of in-person classes. Many colleges have opted for a sort of hybrid approach, but one international graduate student in Indiana says the announcement and lack of clarity for what it means for his entirely online schedule this fall came as a complete shock. We agreed not to use his name due to concerns for his visa status.
It's very scary because I wasn't really expecting this to happen.
He says he has yet to hear from his school about what the new guidance means for him and others. About 30,000 international students attended Indiana's colleges and universities last year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Shopping online is the new normal, especially during the coronavirus pandemic. But what about ordering a prescription online? Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett reports that consumers should beware of fraudulent online pharmacies.
Allie Schreier was just out of college when she started her first teaching job, but her new insurance plan didn't cover her allergy medication.
This new allergist that I was seeing in Colorado had said, after several go-rounds of me asking to take this medication, had said, oh, well, actually, you know, that you can just get it online.
The doctor wrote a prescription and gave her the name of an online pharmacy to use.
I was like, oh, that's great. The medication came to my house and looked exactly like it did when I got it before.
It wasn't long before Schreier started feeling really sick. She sought some specialists to no avail. Then, over Christmas, she met up with her sister, who is working in health policy. Schreier offhandedly mentioned ordering her prescription online.
And she said, oh, you sure can't. That is not safe.
Schreier stopped taking the medication, and she felt better right away.
It is shockingly easy to be duped by this.
As many as 98% of online pharmacies are violating laws in some way, according to the Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacies. But that can mean very different things. Here's John Herdig, a Butler University professor and head of the Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacies.
For those sites, best case scenario is they're selling something that's legitimate product, but just not licensed to do so. But more often than not, they're actually selling what we would say substandard, falsified, or counterfeit medications.
These bogus medications might have incorrect dosages of active ingredients, or none at all. Another group, Partnership for Safe Medicines, found dangerous substances in these fake medications like rat poison, antifreeze, and fentanyl. And now, with COVID-19 sweeping the world, many of these online websites are using fear and confusion to their advantage. Some are even marketing cures or a vaccine for the virus.
And what we've been seeing with the pandemic is that there's just been no shortage of scams and frauds and all sorts of stuff going on.
This is David Califf with LegitScript, an organization that verifies online pharmacies.
Typically, the rogue pharmacies are marketing erectile dysfunction drugs. That's one of the top things, but also various forms of pain medication, things like that. So they're absolutely pivoting to meet demand.
Shutting down these rogue pharmacies is tough. Close one, it'll pop back up under a different name. Since most of these sites are based overseas, U.S. regulators have little influence.
I don't think any one entity is going to be able to solve the problem of rogue internet pharmacies. It's going to be a combination of, you know, government interaction, private industry, and then nonprofit organizational advocacy.
Califf says internet registrars, the places that distribute domains, along with search engines like Google and Bing, also hold some responsibility. Right now, finding these rogue pharmacies doesn't involve going to hidden parts of the internet. Their websites are often listed on the first page of results from Google or Bing, and often look professional and legitimate. In fact, they can even fool doctors and pharmacists. Here's Hurtig again. He helped conduct a national study to see if medical professionals could spot rogue pharmacies.
So if you put, you know, three of these websites up, one's legitimate, one's illegitimate, roughly pharmacists will get it right about half the time.
Physicians and nurses got it right even less often.
I mean, there are huge knowledge gaps that we identified as part of the study.
To check on a website, consumers can visit the FDA's website to see a list of warning letters and other actions. There are, of course, legitimate online pharmacies, like those operated by Costco and Express Scripts. And here's how to tell the difference. They will always ask for a prescription. You can also verify the URL at LegitScripts' website. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Carter Barrett.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Ellen Zarletta.
IU Northwest Center for Urban and Regional Excellence is offering up some non-credit online sessions, the way they put it, for learners of all ages. But we have with us somebody who knows all about it. We have Ellen Zarletta. She's in charge of the Center for Urban and Regional Excellence to tell us about the classes. And Ellen, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you today.
Well, give us an idea of the thoughts behind creating the series of courses. A lot of these courses I know typically get held on campus during the summer, but that's not the case this year.
It's not the case, and we've made some adjustments, but we are still committed to offering our non-credit courses for learners, as we say, of all ages. We have adult education courses for those who want to explore some career skills or even other life skills. And then we also have courses that are specifically for seniors who are age 55 and older. I'll just take a minute and give you a few examples.
Yep.
And so that people can get an idea of the types of courses that we do have.
Okay. Well, let's start out with the adult education courses first.
Sure. The adult education courses are, and as you mentioned earlier, we are having to make a transition because of the circumstances that everybody is facing. We don't have face-to-face, and so they are all online. Mm-hmm. And so the adult education courses would include things like career exploration courses. So if someone wanted to be or thinking about becoming a pharmacy technician, we have an excellent class to open to anyone who's age 18 and over. We have a state licensed pharmacy tech who can explain just what it's like to be a pharmacy tech and answer questions about the profession so that people could explore this before they would move in the direction of becoming a pharmacy tech. Obviously,
yeah,
a very important job. We also have other adult education courses that are career training program courses, and we have a full set of online courses, everything from professional certifications to just life exploration, arts, et cetera. Over 1,000 courses that are offered online on a regular basis.
Wow. Now, I know that what is included within the adult education sphere is something that's called Senior University. Tell us the thoughts behind that and what is offered during this special summer event this year.
Well, Senior University has been offered by IU Northwest for over 20 years. And so Garrett Cope, I want to make sure that we give him credit. Mm-hmm. He was the person who started the program, and it started out as an arts-oriented program. And over the course of a couple decades, we have evolved as the community's needs have changed. And so this summer, we have a special session, Social Security and COVID-19. So Social Security Administration, their specialists are going to be hosting a live online session so that people get some facts about what Social Security Administration is doing in response to COVID. Obviously, a very important topic is people who are retired, disabled, on Medicare are facing new challenges, and they might want some updates on what Social Security is doing. The second one, everybody is moving into growing their own food,
yeah,
and people are exploring community gardening. So we have one to talk about. We have a program that talks about eating to improve your immunity system. And we have a nutrition educator who's going to be delivering that program. And we have smartphones. We have so many different offerings.
Yeah. I know some of these offerings are very interesting. And a lot of them I know obviously are key to the fact that, number one, they're online courses. And number two, they're courses that probably people would follow through on, I suppose, or maybe they wouldn't necessarily, like the introduction to social media. They need to learn about them. And this is, I guess, one way to kind of be instructed about them too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And in that case, we're trying to accommodate everybody's needs. We know that not everybody has access to computers or an iPad, and so that particular session is or can do their sessions live because sometimes people are working. So this is going to be a recorded session, and we have a social media strategist who's been working for decades. She's a phenomenal teacher, and so she'll talk about those different platforms so people can make some decisions as to how it is they want to start interacting if they want to on social media. So Facebook, as you said, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn for people who are professionals and want to learn a little bit more about LinkedIn. All of those are recorded. You take them. They're self-paced. You can go and do it at your own leisure. And some of the other courses are live and online so that people can join by phone or by computer, and they can ask questions of the instructors live as well. Mm-hmm.
Now, going down the list of some of the topics that are offered during these summer free online classes is one in particular, and you have nursing professor Crystal Shannon involved in this, and it's a very important one for seniors. The title of the program is called Remaining Safe in Times of Disaster. Tell us what Professor Shannon is going to talk about on this one.
So Professor Shannon is actually an expert in this work. She teaches for us in the area of emergency preparedness in our School of Nursing. She has she uses a number of different ways to communicate stories about what people have been through and then the lessons that those people have learned. And then she also provides everyone with some tips and hints for how it is that they can prepare themselves in case of personal emergencies. There are ways for people to do self-assessments. There are some emergency plans she's going to be talking about. And so she's really good about tailoring it to the interests of the participants. And so because you'll be able to talk to her, it's a live session, people can ask questions and learn more about how to prepare given their particular circumstances.
I know
we want to remain safe.
I know there's one other course in particular, too, that kind of goes along with the seniors, senior at university concept, is one, and people may know about Deepak Chopra's 21 Days of Abundance. And there is, I guess, a course that is offered in this summer offering this year that is tied in with Chopra's work.
Right, and that's called Live Your Best Life. It's important for us to reflect on, for all of us to reflect on how we're living our best life, which can be very stressful during times like this. So to take an opportunity to just sort of reflect and learn how to breathe, to find some inspirational readings, to get some introduction to meditation. She'll also be talking about stretching and relaxing and the importance of that and maintaining your health. And so you just find a quiet spot, get your pillow, grab your journal if you have one. And again, this is a live series, so you'll be in with a group of people, and they'll all be focused on trying to find the best mix of mind, body, and spirit activities for you so you can just take a moment and relax.
And Ellen, I know for sure there's one program where it is not necessarily geared to adults. The ones we've talked about so far within Senior University or some of these other related courses have adults in mind. But the summer reading programs are very interesting, and youngsters are involved in that too.
Yes. In fact, our summer reading skills program is for both children and adults. This has been a very successful program for us. We have run it for at least 10 years now. And this has also moved into an online environment. It used to be held in various locations across Northwest Indiana. Now it's live and online, and the students can speak with the teachers. They complete some, they engage in discussion. There's some class activities, and by the end of that time period, people can have a better appreciation of what they can do to improve their reading skills. And, students are out in the summer, and so this is a great way for them to stay connected to learning and a very fun way for them to do it as well. So if you have children, we would encourage you to explore this reading skills program that's out there.
We've spent time here giving mostly highlights about these offerings from the Center for Urban and Regional Excellence and the very special 9-credit online courses. If anybody's interested, number one, in finding out more about the classes, and number two, about being able to register for them, what do they do?
Okay, well, you can connect with us in a couple different ways. We have our website. So if you go to www.iun.edu, you can search for us at that website under CURE, C-U-R-E, or the Center for Urban and Regional Excellence. And then our website, that's probably the easiest way. Our website will pop up. You can also contact us via email or phone. Phone number is 219-980-6978, 980-6978, and leave us a message. Our email is also on the website, and so you can just send us an email, and we make sure to get back to you within 24 hours.
That's great. Ellen Sarletta is the director of the Center for Urban and Regional Excellence at Indiana University Northwest, and we've been hearing more about some non-credit online sessions for learners of all ages that are being offered this summer.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.